Good morning to each one. Greetings in Jesus' name. Good to see each one here and the visitors. Maybe one more announcement. I think Barton is leaving tomorrow for Mississippi for CASP. How many here know what CASP is? Most of y'all know? Okay. Then I won't explain it. So, and he will be gone for 4 weeks, so you can pray for him there. And Neil's gone too, so I assume you have someone to take your place when you leave. I don't know. I'll let you figure that out. So, very good. It's been a blessing to be here, and I thought about the fact that it's Palm Sunday, and it would certainly be appropriate to preach on something like that. But I guess you can, in a spiritual way, lay down your palms in front of Christ. I assume that you can do that now. And as we do that, then we can look forward to a day when he will come back and all the saints with him, and that will be another scene. But this morning, I'd like to continue what I had promised last time, starting and continuing on child training. I'd like to start with Psalm 139. Go there. Psalm 139, we have the psalm here of David, and he's saying how, you know, God is everywhere, and he's thinking about that. And then he says in verse 13, he says, "For thou hast possessed my reins." Now, it's an interesting word. It actually means kidneys. And the way I understand, in Bible times, when we think of the heart, they thought more of a kidney. So you can think about that. "Thou hast possessed my reins, thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My substance was not hid from thee when I was made in secret and curiously wrought in the lower parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my substance, yet being unperfect, and in thy book all my members were written, which in continuance were fashioned, when as yet there was none of them." We'll stop there because the next is God's thoughts to us. This thought of marvelous are thy works, and I thought of that this morning. One of the things I do Sunday mornings, I go for a walk. And I was going for a walk this morning. All of a sudden, pileated woodpecker lit up about 40 feet away from me, and that whole woods just, and I looked at him and I thought, how can you make that kind of noise? And he waited a bit and back at it again, his beak going, and marvelous are thy works. And you just take that into the human body. Marvelous are thy works. And the only reason that we can even think about teaching on a subject is because we serve a God of order. Because we serve a God who is marvelous. And a God who likes structure and order. And it's so important we think about this subject tonight, this morning. And last time I had the phrase, looking at the forest. And I did that because, at least for me, it is important sometimes that I step back from the pressures of life and look at the beauty of things, okay? But there are times in life when you can't do that. And I used to hunt a lot. I might as well just accept that I don't hunt much, and I probably am going to give it up soon. I assume I will. But I used to hunt a lot. And there were a couple times in my younger years hunting that I was a little bit worried that I was lost. Because I love to go walk the mountains. And there were times that it was like, man, this just don't look familiar. This don't look familiar. This don't look familiar. And I didn't keep a compass or anything with me because mostly in the northern mountains, you go down far enough, you'll eventually find a stream and find your way out. But there are times in life in the woods you really feel like you need a map. There was another time that I clearly remember I'd bought a new flashlight. And first day of hunting season, it worked great. Second day, of going up early in the morning, and my flashlight went dead on me. And what do you do? It's dark, and you're sitting there. So I walked by a little bit of moonlight that was there to get where I needed to go. And I don't know how you feel about it. I want to be careful this morning that I don't portray it that this is a burdensome responsibility or a negative responsibility. I hope you get what I mean. It is a wonderful thing. But there are times in life where you feel like you're walking by the light of the moon. And it's not very bright that night. And there are times when you feel like, nothing's familiar. I'm not sure if I'm on the right track. So there are times we are in the woods, and I want to acknowledge that. But I'd like to start pretty basic this morning. I'd like to put something up on the board here. And this is something that's taught by a number of different people. So it certainly is not original with me. But I'd like to start with the thought of when a baby comes into this world, I am told that there are five basic needs, okay? One is, actually I want you girls to help me out. One is what? What do you think is the one basic need that they have? Well, we got food. All right. And this is other than sleep, okay? Because newborns do spend a lot of time doing that. But other than sleep, they need food. Another one that they need is touch. And then you have eye contact. Movement. And then voices and smiles. Now y'all can answer this. And who gives that? Who gives those needs? What do you think? Mom does. Thank you. Mom gives that. And so, I am told that this is very, very important in the life of a newborn child. Obviously, they need food. And feeding is touching and holding, eye contact. And they say that a baby's range is, 10 inches for a while. I'm not sure when at some point it goes beyond that, obviously, but 10 inches. And so it's that mom feeding, eye contact, that is so good. And then you also have, they have learned the voices, the smiles of their mother. And I'm not going to spend much more time on that, but we're going to use that a little bit later, maybe just a couple of those things. And so those, we come into this world, we're fearfully and wonderfully made, we need this. A child needs their mother. It's just how God made us. So I'd like to move in to the next point, number two, is who gets the child's heart? I'd like to think about that a little bit. So when a child is raised in a Christian home, and I'm going to say at home operating normally, I believe that the child will naturally, the parent will naturally have the child's heart. So this baby comes in, his mom's taking care of him in a great way, and I know dad is there doing some of that as well. But you know in yourself, as you look at that little child, that heart is naturally turned toward you. It is naturally turned toward the mom. It's not something that you have to try to do. As you meet those needs, that baby, his heart is turned toward you. And, you know, in a world where sometimes it feels like things are tilted against us, parents, I'd like you to grab a hold of this one. This is one thing that is now tilted in your favor. That child from young his thoughts are toward you. His heart is toward you. It's tilted in your favor. And we can think about that. You know, growing up, a mom is generally very precious in the sight of a child. A mom's right there. And love reciprocates naturally, I think, at a young age like that. Parents give the love, the child naturally loves back. And I think it is my, I think it because of the place that the mom fills. And obviously it's some of her, the softness that comes from the feminine side is why children naturally run to mom when things are going wrong. It's just a, there's a pull there. But I would like us to remember that it started way back at the beginning. It started way back at the beginning, that natural pull to run there. And, but yet dad has that too. Dad said, did you have to teach your boys to walk in your steps to want to be with you? No. They want to be like dad. They want to kind of walk like dad does. They just do that. And dad, you know, it doesn't, when the boys are young, you know, if dad likes sport, that's what the boys like. And if dad likes to hunt, that's what the boys want to do. And if dad don't like to hunt, the boys probably don't want to either. And some of that, it comes along because as when that child is young, that heart is naturally turned towards you. It is naturally turned towards the dad, towards the father. And so I just kind of want to lay that foundation, how that is in our favor as we start this process. That heart turned toward the parents. But there comes a point then, before the child is very old, that there is more needs that they have. And they need three more things I'm going to put down here that a child needs. And it is instruction, training, and discipline. I'd like to take a lot of the message from Hebrews chapter 12. I'd like you to turn with me there. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 5. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partaker of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous but grievous, but nevertheless afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. We'll stop there for now, but pick up some other verses later. Now this, it says, ye have forgotten. And I know what I'm doing here is that I'm taking a passage that was where the Hebrew writer was taking what he saw parents do and trying to help them to understand God's love for them, what happens, okay? And I'm reversing that, okay? I'm not doing that ignorantly. But there are verses here. There is a basis here that we can teach from this morning as we look at how God deals with us. And also, as Paul also used the illustration of parenting to teach also how God does work with believers. And so anyway, this thought here of you have forgotten, and I found that interesting because this is some of the things we're going to look at this morning are forgotten or being forgotten, I would say, in our society today. They have been forgotten. And there is certainly a movement in society and even in our circles today, and I mean that broadly, where the thought is out there that people are very much maybe in touch with the first 5 points and obviously 6 and 7, but the 8th point on discipline, they say, drives children away. And I would like to affirm this morning that is not true. That is not true, that drives children away. And I would like to emphasize this morning here that teaching, training, and discipline go together. In fact, you cannot separate them. So instruction or teaching has the idea of you give instruction, okay? Training has the idea of it's again and again. It's repetitive. It's that line upon line. And discipline then has the idea of enforcing what you have instructed and what you are training. And those three must go together. And I'd like to just read to you some of the words used here. I'd like to just read the meanings of those words to help us get it. We use the word chastening, but it's not a word that you'll probably use tomorrow unless you're talking about spiritual things with someone. So what does it mean? It means tutorage. Well, we can understand that, what it means to tutor someone, to coach, to teach. And tutorage, that is education or training, line upon line, or disciplinary correction. The word rebuked is there, is to be admonished or tell a fault. The word scourge there means to flog. The word corrected means a trainer, teacher, discipliner, and instructor. And so I'd like to, as I look at all of them, I see these three principles of instruction or teaching and training, which is line upon line, and we have discipline, how those three must go together. Because you see, if you would, you can instruct and you can train, but if you've been a parent for any amount of time, you know that if you do not discipline, your instruction is falling by the wayside. But if you would discipline without instruction, that also does not work. So it's these three working together. Just as God works with us, as the scriptures say, that bring about the peaceable fruit of righteousness. And so I would like to, this thought here that is kind of rumbling around today, where this thought that discipline is harmful to the child, I would like to say again that it is not true, because not only because the Bible says it, but it is also proven that a child who is disciplined feels more secure than a child who is left to do what they want to do. And the reason, parents, that little child, that as he grows up, and you have, as moms, if you have met their needs in a real way right here, when that child, by a year old and less, they feel very secure in your presence, in your arms. And they have learned to trust you. And it is off of that basis that when you start to discipline for wrongdoing, that they feel safe in your presence. They feel safe with what you are doing because of the needs that you have met in their lives to this point. Now, I want to just insert something here, and I'm going to go on. And that is, so sometimes these needs are not met, and that produces something else, and I am not teaching on that this morning. I want to make that clear. I'm not teaching on that. And even though I would, but I'm not teaching that here at this church, okay? So anyway, just to make that clear, I'm talking about parents who have children given to them, and they're raised in a normal Christian setting. And so I'd like to look at this thought of teaching and training. I think we know what that means. And the thought of discipline, I'd like to think about that for a bit. Discipline carried out. And you know, if you read Proverbs and other scriptures, it always refers to the back, or the backside, if you want to call it that. We might as well just be straight this morning. Proverbs 10, verse 13, "In the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Judgments are prepared for scorners, and stripes for the back of fools. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back." So now, there is a reaction in our world because sometimes this is carried out in a non-Christian way, and I understand that. But that is not what we're talking about this morning. God has given a place where there is cushion, and a spanking does not hurt the body, but it does inflict temporary pain. And the purpose of this is to help the child see the error of their way and to enforce what has been instructed and what has been trained. And I think this morning we only need to look at society to realize that if you think just talking will produce what you want, you're sadly mistaken. If just talking would actually teach Charlie not to lie, certainly we would all do it, but it doesn't work that way. And the Bible gives us direction that it doesn't work that way. And so in this thought of instructing and training, line upon line, there's a few principles, and I'm going to call them cardinal rules. I think as parents, you should have some cardinal rules that maybe you don't really tell everybody, but it's a cardinal rule that you have that you will not go over. You're committed to. And number one is this: never say something you don't plan to carry out. I don't know how you find this, but I can find that pretty difficult. It's pretty easy to say something and you don't plan to carry it out. But I challenge all of us on this is to make that one of your cardinal rules. Never say something, never make a threat that you don't plan to carry through with. Let's just think that through. If you do that on a constant basis, you have just undermined everything you say. So that's one, that's the cardinal rule try to live by. Number two. Don't bop children around on any part of the body. And this is a cardinal rule that I've tried hard to live by. I understand exactly what it's like to be a parent and to have moments of impulse where you do something that you regret. But I think it's also, in my personal experience, I have not found that bopping them on the head, knock around or whatever, provides any kind of fruit that's good. It rather causes anger. And so I've tried hard. You talk to my children, I have failed at that a few times. But I've tried hard to make that a cardinal rule for our home, that I will discipline in the right way. Because I do not believe you could really find a biblical basis for, I'm saying bop them around. You know what I mean by that? Am I talking English here? Okay. Number three, don't get into the habit of yelling around. And I want you to know, parents, I'm a parent too. I understand emotions go up. I understand things happen. But I really do believe this point. Don't get in the habit of yelling around. There is a time to yell if there's a danger issue or something to get someone's attention. Certainly there would be. I appreciated the honesty of one parent one time after some classes and after some time said, well, we're not yelling around anymore. You know, sometimes you can think things are isolated to your struggles, but they're not necessarily. Parents as a whole can struggle with these things. Number four, Let the peace of God rule in your heart. If you're here this morning and you're a parent and you do not have peace with God, if you're here and you're angry at people, maybe you have unforgiveness or bitterness in your heart, let's look at some verses here that are right after these verses we looked at in Hebrews chapter 12. It says in verse 14, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God. Lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. I think a cardinal rule for parents is this. And it may not be, maybe there's something troubling you in life that it doesn't mean you're not at peace with God. Okay? There's things in life that trouble sometimes that doesn't mean that our salvation, we're not sure if we're saved or not. But I have found that sometimes it's other pressures and other things happening that make you a little short-tempered, and it comes out in the home. You know, let's just be honest here this morning. A man can stand up here and preach and teach, and it's not the real person. The real person is at home. The real person's at home. How is he acting? How does he treat his wife? How does he treat his children? That's what it is. And for me, one of the things that is so important, that I am at peace with God, I am at peace with life, and I am at peace with my fellow men. And I think as we get up each morning, that should be a cardinal rule for starting the day. Because in my experience, I think when I've inflicted the most damage on my family, had nothing to do with them, but it had something to do with the other pressures of life. And so, if you're here as a parent and you say, well, I have failed in that, I understand. I have too. But start today. Make that a cardinal rule of your parenting, that I will start each day at peace with God. Because if you don't, your problems are kind of like a snowball with wet snow. They just get bigger and bigger and bigger. I think as a child gets older, you could consider and should consider other forms of discipline. You see, there are times in life that the words, I'm sorry, are not enough. Now, I want to be careful with that. But there's something that as a child gets older, they have to realize sometimes when there has been wrongdoings, that the words sorry or whatever are a little bit inadequate. And it's something also that we as adults need to have a grip on. And there is actually a biblical term for that, and it's called restitution. So, and maybe to make sure, help you understand, make sure we're on the same page here, thinking about this thought of sometimes I'm sorry is not enough. There was a time this week I felt that way, and I use it simply for the sake of illustration, and I'll let you implement that into your own life. So we've had this job for about 2 months now that it's a big rolling steel door, biggest one we've ever done. And we got the job, and the pressure is high to get this thing done. And I think in the last 2 weeks, they emailed me or called me or texted me about every 2 or 3 days, when's this door coming, when's this door coming, when's this door coming. And they would only tell me the week of the 23rd. That's the only answer I would get, and that's fine. And they called a week or so ago and said, hey, you know, we need $600 and some dollars more for the shipping of this door. And that's fine because the contract says shipping rates will be verified at the time of shipment. And so with fuel cost, I'm sure that's why it went up. And anyway, finally they called me this past week and said the door will be there around lunchtime on Thursday. So we rented two telehandlers, two bigger scissors lifts because ours is not big enough, and had them all show up at the job Thursday morning. And Travis was there waiting, and I was waiting for the phone call. They said the driver will call when they're an hour out. And about 12:30, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to call them because I don't know what to do. I need to know how to plan my day. Where are they at? So I called. Oh, he said, I'm so sorry. I forgot to call you. He said the truck broke down. And we brought it back here. He said, door's still here in Georgia. He said, well, it'll be there at lunchtime tomorrow. And, you know, if I was working for Mike or Linden, we'd have just went on with life, right? But some, it's kind of things in commercial work. You don't call and you don't make those things. You just, you make it. You must be done. The guy looked at me and said, well, or called me and said, well, I mean, you have to be done Monday. I mean, that's, because I told him he would be. Because they got other schedules coming right behind us. And, okay, can you understand an illustration how just say, I'm sorry, I forgot to call you, was kind of inadequate at the moment. Does that make any sense to you? Now, do you understand that we can bring this a lot closer home, a lot smaller, where there are times in life where the word just, I'm sorry, isn't really cutting it, okay? It isn't really doing something. And so, we talked about the conscience a little bit the last time, and I want to talk about that a bit more today. Because you see, there's a law of life that's kind of like something like this. You will make mistakes in life. It could be me this week that I forget to make an important phone call. It really could be. And I might cost someone else something. I acknowledge that. I realize that can happen. But I think there's a key here, and it's something I've wrestled with in life, and I want to be careful with this because the Lord will test me on it, but I think I have come at peace with correcting things that need to be corrected when they need to be corrected. I think I'm at peace with that. Because you know you did something that needs to be corrected, you do it right away, go on with life. But mistakes need to be corrected in a way that clears the conscience. A clear conscience is something that is very important. And I think one of the things we can think about as we help our children grow up, and you will see them sometimes, especially as they get older, they will sometimes make mistakes that the words I'm sorry are maybe not quite adequate, but you need to help them do restitution so that they can have a clear conscience. The other thing that goes along with that, when something is dealt with that is not brought up against them in the future, that we operate the same way that God operates with us, in that whenever we do something wrong and we ask for forgiveness, that is not, God doesn't bring it up against us. Now, if there's something that is a pattern in life, there is a reason to talk about all of that. Number four, children learning to give back. Children learning to give back. Now, I see this in verse 12 and 13. There's a couple ways we could interpret this. One could mean after chastening that they need the help to lift up the hands. But it could also mean for us that, and I have a note here in my Bible that says this, and I don't know if that means someone else preached it or if it's a thought that came to me reading it one time. One of the things that chastening does for us is helps us to look beyond ourselves to other people. Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees and make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. And this thought of giving back is something that we must all learn to do. And you see, chastening does help a person to look beyond themselves. And I want you to, maybe just a few thoughts for children and youth here. So children and youth, think about this morning who got you started in life. I mean, you might be operating pretty much independently right now, some of you. But someone got you started with a lot of hours A lot of time. Okay? A lot of time. And it is because of that. And because of what they are doing today, and Lord willing, what they will do for you in the future, that children should learn to give back. You see, getting the meal together and on the table, if your children have any kind of age to them, should not be mom's responsibility alone, but rather that it should be a team effort, right? Do you all enjoy food? Sure we do. Sure we do. Now, I understand that maybe someone has the primary responsibility of making sure it's cooked, but that should be not just be her responsibility to get it ready. And everything that the family all enjoys should somehow be done with everyone giving back to it. You could think of splitting firewood. Do we all enjoy heat in the home? Absolutely we do. It could be a family responsibility. It's not just dad or mom. It should be family effort in many ways. Anything to do with food, gardening, and all of that. If it's shelling the peas or if it's snapping the green beans and all of that, that can be a family effort in the evening or whenever. It's part of giving back. We sing this song, J-O-Y, J-O-Y. You sure know that song? J-O-Y, J-O-Y? You know it? Sing it. J-O-Y, J-O-Y, this must surely be Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. J-O-Y, J-O-Y, this must surely be. Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. I'm still learning that. But it is something we need to teach our children. It is something, it's a principle that must be taught. And I don't know what young couples talk about today. I know that when I was young and just starting to have children, that some of us my age, when we get together, we would talk about what we were going to do different than our parents did and some of the goals we had for our youth. And I want young couples to get together and talk about that. I want my children to talk about how they want to do better than I did. I think that is good, okay? I think it really is healthy. And if I, young people, I want you to know, if I make something, sometimes I have a little trouble making a sarcastic comment about some of that, and I don't want to do that in the wrong way because I don't want to insinuate that the wrong thing. But we did that, and I know that youth do today, and I don't want you to. But I remember us discussing this thing of, are you going to charge your children, your youth, to live in your home? And I have no idea where those discussions are today. That was kind of a thing we talked about off and on. I suppose each situation is different, depending on how much is being given back in the home already, okay? So there's probably no cut and dried rule. But a number of us were pretty adamant we were not going to do that. We were not going to, our children could live in our house free as long as they wanted. I am now 20 some years on this side of that subject. I think if I had to do it over, I would do something different. And it is not about money. It is not about money. But there's something that we are losing. And it's teaching children and youth to give back. To give back. Okay? It's learning to appreciate what others do for you. It's about learning how life really is. Is there any parents here that have no bills? No bills. Number five. I need to close, but I have two more points. I thought it was going to be a short message. I don't know why I ever think that. But anyway, I'll try to speed it up. Number five, I want to have a few thoughts on keeping the heart of our youth. And I don't feel real qualified on this one, but I do have some thoughts that maybe could be of help to somebody. If I were to sum up what I sense from society, it's something like this. And I feel it working into Christian circles. To keep the heart of your youth, you take them to all the sports games, you do everything with them, you take them hunting, you take them fishing and all that. And there's a place for that. Don't misunderstand what I'm trying to say. But if that is true, I have failed miserably. You ask my children. And this is not a pity party at all. You ask my wife, you ask my children. Much of my spare time in the last 20-some years is reading, studying, preaching, ministry. That's where my spare time goes. Bottom line. Yes, we do things together. I understand that. There are a few things that I think are very important building blocks. Some of them I'm still learning. Number one, learn to show affection. This one's been a little bit hard for me. I enjoy affection as and I am a person that does enjoy touch. I will admit that. There is something, I think it is possibly in our culture some, that I've had to learn the importance of touch, the importance of a hug. And it may be true that when a teenager is growing up, that maybe you won't hug them as much as the little ones. But I would just like to say this morning, I don't care if you're here and you're 60 years old, you sometimes need somebody to put their arm around you. You appreciate that. And I know there's a period of years that youth may go through where they don't want that. I understand that's the point. But probably if there was something I could change, that's one thing I would change and do more of. And I've tried to change some. I'm trying to change some of that in the right way. And you know, dads, I just say it how it is. I do not think there is nothing wrong with you giving a teenage daughter a hug in an appropriate way. Maybe off to the side a little bit. There's something that touch does for us that we need. It meets a need in our hearts that is important. Number two. Help them keep their conscience clear. It is my opinion that those first few years of being a Christian, and that can depend on the age, it is important for a parent to help them keep their conscience clear. You see, even after a child becomes a Christian, the parent is still in some way a mediator between them and God. I want to be careful with that thought, but I think it's true. And I'm going to give you an illustration. So in my teenage years, I enjoyed hunting then, and I did 104 years and didn't get anything. And then I started getting deer. I think this was when I was 17. So I shot my first deer when I was 16, and at 17, I was walking up through the mountain. It was raining, and all of a sudden there was deer. And I pulled up and shot. And I thought I saw the one drop, but I wasn't quite sure. I couldn't see it anywhere, and there's another one standing there. And I thought, did it? So I pulled up and shot again. And I walked up, and there's two of them there. I had two tags, but the law in Pennsylvania was at that point one deer per day. I didn't worry about it, you know, pull the deer out. But you know, it started bothering me later. What about this? And so, while I tend to be pretty closed when I was a youth, and I shouldn't have been that way. I did finally talk to my dad about it. What do you think I should do? I shot 2 deer, and the law says 1 deer per day. He said, I guess I wouldn't worry about it. Now, whether my dad told me exactly the right thing at that moment, I don't leave that up to you. But I want to tell you one thing I did do. It's cleared my conscience. That has not bothered me since that day. And you as parents somehow stand in that gap until they get to an adult life where they have to answer between them and God. And I think it is important that we fill that place and we help keep that conscience clear, because there is something that happens when the conscience becomes muddled. It's hard to get unmuddled some days. It can take years. But anyway. All right, number three. Talk to them about the facts of life and moral purity. You know how I feel about that. I won't spend much time. I think at the proper time, don't do it too early. Be sensitive to all that. But I do believe that some of these talks are building blocks in keeping their heart as they get older. Number four, you ask the questions. You know, I used to think in this perfect parenting world, you have this perfect relationship that your child would always come to you with their problems. Well, I haven't found it that way. And the bottom line is, parents, you need to go ask them, how's it going? Chance of them coming to you are actually probably slim. Let's look at it this way. If it's hard for you to go ask, it's a whole lot harder for them to come to you. And so, talk about the hard questions of life. I have found that while they may not bring it up, when you bring it up, they want to talk about it. And so, I think that is important. And maybe you can do that while you're hunting, but it shouldn't wait for that either. Number five. Things are going to happen. Statements are going to be made. Things are going to happen. And I guess it's a statement that God has brought to me. One of the things I have told myself a number of times, when I would really like to just say a piece of my mind. Can I say that? You know what that you face those moments in life? That God has brought this state to me. Sherwin, are you going to make this a time of building or a time of tearing down? And it's, parents, that's a real question. That sometimes we really can. Are you going to make this a building time or a time of tearing down? Number six, stay consistent. And I do, this is the hardest thing, especially as parents. You see, if there is something that should change in your life, change it. If there's something you need to apologize for, do it. In relation to your children and all things. But if there's something that you should stick to without bending unashamedly, do it also. And that, as a dad, I find the hardest thing to separate that all in the right way. There are times you should change. There are times you should apologize. And there are times you should stand unflinching. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. Let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like the wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. You see, I think it took me 20 years to totally understand my dad. 20 years after I left home. That's what I mean. You see, I remember thinking thoughts like, you know what? I know what Dad is facing now. Have any of the rest of you older men thought about that? And you see, here's the difficult part. It's men and men, all of us, probably especially men, but all of us. You see, you have to be willing to make a stand, knowing that it might take 20 years for them to understand why you stood there. That's hard to do, parents. They might get it in 2 years, they might get it in five, but I will be honest, for me, 20 years later, I understood some things about my dad that I didn't understand until I was older and faced the same things. I want to close with a few thoughts to children. I'll give you this. So in Mark, Jesus, the people were saying, get children, get away. Jesus said, come. He gathered him in his arms. Children, I want you to know that God loves you. If Jesus was here today, he would probably sit down and gather all of you into his arms here at the end of the service. Hebrews 12, he says, speaks to you as unto children. And so there's a few points in this passage, children, for you. Don't despise when your parents chasing you. Don't despise that. Don't faint when you're rebuked. The instruction, training, and discipline prove that your parents love you. That's a hard one to grip, but it is true. The fact that your parents, you see, your parents must look beyond today, and they must look into the future. I was going to say this earlier than I wanted to, but parents, our focus must always be future. You see, the pressure of the moment is never the real pressure. It's looking out and knowing. And if you're here and you've lived many years, you have had you have your eyes open, you know where choices take people. And you know where certain choices will take people. And it's hard to keep that in focus, but it is true. And so, children, your parents are looking ahead. They want what's best for you in the future, not necessarily today. You are to show respect to your parents. Scriptures are there, and your parents love you and are concerned about your future. May God bless you. Let us kneel for prayer.